G'day, yeah. Since the English language world is marking the bicentenary of the birth of Charles Dickens, a conversation this week here in Lingua Franca with one of his biographers, Robert Douglas Fairhurst, on the meaning of his many pen names, including Boz, Tibbs, W, and even the Sparkler of Albion. Now, Charles Dickens was fabulously successful also in his own lifetime, and his style of writing was both imitated and parodied, called Dickensy in his day. We call it Dickensian now, but that's also a synonymous adjective for the Victorian era of his life, in which children play a prominent part. And there were a lot of children, a lot of sick children. I think of poverty, of cold, of factories, of hunger, and about how either being poor or not being poor made such a huge difference to your life or to your life's chances. They're all things that he wrote about, right?
He did, and he wrote from experience. Dickens experienced poverty and experienced hunger and wrote about them in a little autobiographical fragment that his friend John Forster then published in the first biography of Dickens. It's a well-known story, but it's worth reminding ourselves of how easily Dickens' life could have turned out differently. And when he says in the autobiographical fragment, for any care that was taken of me, I might have been a little robber or a little vagabond. These weren't just stories he was imagining. When he walked to work in Warren's Blacking Warehouse, he would see dozens of children sleeping on the streets, barefoot, in the coldest weather, fighting sometimes for a few scraps to eat, stealing scraps in Covent Garden Market, you know, cabbage leaves and so on, turning cartwheels to amuse passers-by, maybe in the hope of getting a penny or two. And the world of Oliver Twist, in particular, was not 1,000 miles away from the world that Dickens himself realised he'd only just managed to escape.
Yeah.
Although, there again, I mean, we have to remember that Dickens was writing stories, and even if they keep one foot in the world of fact, they do also keep one foot in the world of fiction. I mean, Dickens was obsessed by fairy tales, for instance, and so Oliver Twist, which starts off with that grim realism of the workhouse, ends with a romance happy ending in which Oliver Twist turns out to have been a nice middle-class child all along.
Right. Well, can we talk about his pseudonyms and why he used them and what they meant? I mean, there were a number of them, weren't there?
Yes, that's right. Revolver, the Inimitable, the Sparkler of Albion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we probably don't have time to talk about them all, but how about Boz? That was an early one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And people have often taken Dickens and his family at their word on it, that there's a character in The Vicar of Wakefield called Moses, and Dickens couldn't pronounce the word. He called it Boses, and then that was shortened to Boz, so it became a family in-joke. But I would have thought that it's more likely that the fact that there is a character called Charles in The Vicar of Wakefield who visits his father in prison, that's more likely to have been significant, given that that's what the young Charles had to do when his own father was imprisoned for debt. So in calling himself Boz, what Dickens was doing, I think, was trying to recreate a whole new family around him, although one in where he would be in charge. He would no longer be the vulnerable, abused, ignored child. He would be able to gather and select his own family, which of course would be his family of readers.
The one that he created and could endlessly give to and endlessly get the attention of.
Exactly, and it starts with sketches by Boz, and he carries on being known as Boz even after he starts to sign himself as Charles Dickens from 1838 onwards. But one of the places where those two identities come together later in his life is in the public readings, where he's there in person and he recreates the intimacy of a drawing room in which the father is reading to the gathered family. It just happens that his gathered family often is thousands of people packed into an auditorium or a theatre with a single spotlight picking out Dickens at the heart of the stage, who is also at the heart of this family he's managed to create for himself over the years. And one of the things that the current bicentenary celebrations have done, I think, is they have opened up that gap there was between the public mask, the public face of Dickens, the one that used to be on the £10 note in the UK, and the private Dickens behind that mask, who was often unhappy, who was driven, who was restless, and who remained wounded, I think. And that wound of his childhood never really healed, which is one of the reasons he came back to it in novel after novel, not least by giving his characters versions of his own name. It's as if he wanted to relive his early life when he was Charles Dickens the Anonymous, but also relieve himself of that past once he became Charles Dickens the Famous Novelist. It's as if he could never quite reconcile how one version of Charles Dickens had become the other version of Charles Dickens. And that, I think, really does have to be thought of as the heart of why he carries on writing quite as much, and especially why he carries on, in a sense, needing to do these public readings towards the end of his life, when they were clearly killing him, and he was advised not to carry on with them. But he needed to put himself at the heart of this applauding throng. He needed to be visibly, publicly loved.
Mm. Well, in the transition from those early Nom de Plume, because his writing was known by them, wasn't it? Not just Boz, but Tibbs wasn't there.
Yes, that's right.
And others. But in the transition from those to the author's name, how did that work? Or perhaps you need also to tell why he assumed those other names first.
Yes, I mean, in some ways it's a little like the question as to why he carried on wearing flashy waistcoats, which were a young man's fashions, but he carried on well into middle age. It was something of a performance. It was a facade. It was a mask which allowed him to be the public celebrity and at the same time to hide behind it like a breastplate, or indeed like a mask. And something similar, I think, is going on in those early pseudonyms. They are a way in which he can project himself onto the page, but he can also protect himself. He can hide behind them. So he doesn't have to commit himself to life as an author. He can only commit a pseudonym, a role. It becomes a little bit like the amateur theatricals that he enjoyed. So irony, for instance, is one of his key modes of writing in the early sketches. And that, too, allows him to both respond to what he sees around him and put himself at a distance from it. When he writes as Boz, he's writing as Dickens, but also as an angle to the real person, Dickens. Boz is a man of a crowd. Boz is a representative figure. He is the lower middle class man, the early flaneur who drifts through the city, not really attached to what he's describing. And so Dickens is using those pseudonyms as a series of staging posts in creating his own identity as a writer. And when he then translates those identities into Charles Dickens, Charles Dickens has come to stand for much, much more than just the individual human being. Charles Dickens has come to stand for this series of individuals, Tibbs, Boz, and so on, who have taken up various stances. And Charles Dickens then becomes a kind of handle to that bundle of selves that his readers have been enjoying.
And how did he do it then? I mean, did he kind of step in front of all of those characters and, you know, do a da-da, it's really me, or was it revealed in print, you know, that Boz was really a writerly persona of Charles Dickens. How did it manifest itself?
It's very interesting, this story, because there were, of course, a number of leaks, as we would now describe them. Literary London was a small place that was then, as now, full of gossip, riven by intrigue, fiercely competitive. And, of course, people talked, they gossiped, and there were a few literary magazines that dropped heavy hints that Boz was Dickens, Dickens was Boz. The phrase, who the Dickens or what the Dickens, was in the language then. So, of course, that was an easy trick to take the idea of, you know, who the Dickens can Boz be, and then say, ha-ha, it's Dickens. Dickens, though, unveils himself twice. He does it first at the curtain call to one of his early plays, when the audience shouted for Boz, and then Dickens emerged from behind the theatre curtain. And apparently the audience was disappointed, because of course they had a Boz in their imaginations that no human being could possibly live up to. The second place where he reveals himself is on the title page of Oliver Twist, after it's been serialised month on month. It's then published in three volumes as a novel. Dickens decides to change the title page from Boz to Charles Dickens, because in his eyes, Charles Dickens has to be responsible for something as serious as a three-volume novel. Boz is the writer of comic sketches. Boz is, in a sense, the literary flaneur. He drifts from one subject to the next without settling down. But a three-volume novel is something solid. It's substantial. It suggests his arrival as a novelist, and that's why Dickens decides to take responsibility for it. And thereafter, whenever he produces novels as volumes, he always signs them off as Charles Dickens.
So Boz was immensely successful and well-known.
Yes, he was, but he was well-known for a particular kind of writing, which was broadly comic. And it was either comic in a funny sense, or it was comic in the sense of Balzac and the human comedy of life on the streets. And what Dickens wanted, and in a sense was always haunted by, was this desire to turn himself from a clown into a serious man of letters. And he spent a lot of time later in his life trying to, as he said, raise the reputation of the novelist, to make the novelist a responsible public figure. And Boz, in some sense, was a ball and chain that he wanted to get rid of.
I guess you feel that you know this character fairly well?
I'm not sure I do.
That's why I'm sort of asking a bit quizzically.
Yeah, people often at the time said that he was mercurial, meaning that he was, I suppose, flashy and a bit unstable and full of life and energy. And that's absolutely true. But as well as that, like mercury, if you put your finger on it, if you try to put your finger on it, it just splinters. And the more pressure you put on it, the more it splinters. Mm. And I feel like that with writing about Dickens, that in a sense, he's like an escape artist. The more you try to pin him down, the better he is at slipping away.
Well, kids who've had hard times are often like that, aren't they?
Yes.
Robert Douglas Fairhurst on the phone from Magdalen College at Oxford in England, where he's a fellow and tutor in English, and whose biography of Charles Dickens is called Becoming Dickens. Check the Lingua Franca website for the publication details. And from me, Maria Zylstra, ciao ciao.